The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is David Cohn, and I'm happy to provide the introduction to the 6th Natalie Cohn Memorial Lecture in memory of my mother, who was a longtime enthusiastic supporter of the Free Library. As many of you know, the Free Library is dedicated to advancing literacy, guiding learning, and inspiring curiosity. From its award-winning author event series to its thought-provoking programs, please consider making a gift that will help the library continue to produce such transformative programming. For as long as I can remember, my mother had a subscription to The New Yorker and was deeply appreciative of the quality of the writing and especially the humor in those pages, something she passed along to me once I had graduated beyond National Lampoon, lo, those many years ago. For me, it was an easy choice to select the authors for tonight's lecture. It's now my pleasure to introduce cartoonist and best-selling author Roz Chast and humorist and writer Patricia Marks. Best known for her over 800 cartoons in The New Yorker, Chast has also written and illustrated more than a dozen books, and her work has been featured in Scientific American, the Harvard Business Review, and Mother Jones, among other publications. Her 2014 memoir in cartoon, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, was a New York Times bestseller, a finalist for the National Book Award in Nonfiction, and winner of the National Book Critics Circle Award for Autobiography and Memoir. Marks has been contributing to The New Yorker since 1989, and today is a staff writer at the magazine. She previously wrote for Saturday Night Live and the Nickelodeon show Rugrats. She was the first woman to be elected to the Harvard Lampoon, the world's longest-running college humor magazine, and is the author, among other books, of two novels, Starting From Happy and Him, Her, Him Again, The End of Him, both of which were finalists for the Thurber Prize for American Humor. In 2015, she was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship. Friends since the late 1970s, Chast and Marks have repeatedly pooled their talents to side-splitting effect. Their new book, Why Don't You Write My Eulogy Now So I Can Correct It, A Mother's Suggestions, pairs witticism spoken by Marx's mother with cartoons by Chast. We're so pleased to have them here with us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Roz Chast and Patricia Marks to the Free Library.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. I was told not to stand too close to the mic because and not to make any plosive sounds. So,
I was told to hold it here and not by the antenna because I don't think they want me to hurt it.
We are here to talk about a book that we put together. Patty wrote it. I did the pictures. It is called Why Don't You Write My Eulogy Now So I Can Correct It? I am going to show some slides from it, talk about it. These are Patty's parents, from left to right, her father and her mother.
It's very scary to have your parents larger than life in back of you, and my mother and a lot of family in the audience. There's nowhere to hide here.
This is a picture of my mother. It was taken in about 1873. Patty and I have spent a lot of this book tour deciphering exactly what is written on that pin, and we've decided that it says millet.
Yeah, there was a big grain in the Chast family. They loved millet.
Oh.
Whereas the Marxists were barley people.
Barley people, yeah. I've included this slide because,
Well, this is the reason we met and became friends and collaborated on a zillion projects, this being the last one. This is the first piece...
Well, not the last one.
The
most recent one.
The most recent one, yes. We have one, a book coming out next year, which will also not be the last one. But this was the very first piece that I ever had published in a magazine that my father didn't print on the Xerox machine. It was published in the Atlantic Monthly. I was about 23, and Roz illustrated it, and she was also in her, probably 23.
Yeah.
And we were starting out.
We did not know each other.
We didn't know each other. As you can see, the title and subject matter is oddly and sadly relevant still. And it came out, and my mother called and said, "That's a great illustration." I mean, I assume she liked it. Whoever did that should be congratulated, and I think you would like her. You should call her, which is like the wackiest idea. You don't just go around calling the person who illustrated your piece, but I do as I'm told, always. So I called Roz, and we had, considering it all, it wasn't too awkward.
No.
We became friends.
Yes, we did. It was kind of as if Patty's mother set us up on a play date.
Yeah.
And yet it was a very successful play date, because we're still on the play date, basically.
Yeah. It was like when you're 6 years old, and your mother said, "She's six, you're six," and shoves you on. Go play with her.
It's so like, go play.
We're playing still.
Yeah, we're still playing. These are some slides from the book. Humming is hostile. And it's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, have you ever been with your partner and, like, you're just kind of there and suddenly it's like, and you go, what? Is something wrong? Mm-hmm. And they go, no, just humming, just, you know.
Right. It's kind of like if you don't have earplugs, just hum and nobody, you don't have to talk to anybody.
There's always something going on. This is never serve salmon when entertaining. It is boring.
That's something I was told growing up, and it's true, but people like it.
I love salmon. Nature, if seen at all, is best seen from a car.
We fully believe this. We don't even really think the car is necessary. You can look in a picture.
Yes.
There's somebody, a friend of mine's here, Paul Rusin, and his mother. He was driving along in the country with his mother, and they'd pretty much never been to the country. And a deer walked along the road, and his mother said, "Look, a picture of a deer."
Yeah. Girls named Susan are full of confidence. Any Susans in the audience? Yes. Well, I don't know. If you're writing a novel, I'll tell you what to do. Don't make it boring. And I think this is excellent advice.
Read the titles. The other bit of book advice that I was given is, if you have a book club, whatever you do, don't pick Absalom. It will totally dissolve your book club. Happened to my parents' book clubs and two other book clubs I know.
Never wear red and black together or you will look like a drum majorette. Which, I don't know, it's kind of true when you think about it.
And yet, we've been on tour for the whole week, and mostly what I wear are red and black leggings, and we've had no bands following us, so maybe not so true.
You don't need to spend a lot of time in San Francisco. It's all frosting and no cake. And funnily enough, one of the places that we were touring was San Francisco. And
the only place we were there for two nights.
Yeah.
And they liked it.
Yeah, they did. Well, they didn't kill us.
They didn't kill us, and we blamed it on somebody else. So we didn't say.
If you use me or him ungrammatically, I have failed as a parent. The bedside, and this is the bedside book of TV anchors who have used who and whom incorrectly by the author. If you ever say irregardless, I will disown you. And And this is something, I mean, my parents were teachers, and it was very, very, very important to them as children of immigrants that I speak English properly. In fact, I had this little friend when I was growing up I grew up in Brooklyn, and I had this friend in the building who spoke with a very, very, very heavy Brooklyn accent. She would come, and my mother would overhear, and she'd say, "Roz, you want to go to the store with me?" And she really did speak like that, and my mother sort of like broke up our friendship. So she would not tolerate that from people. But I have inherited this. Now, like, if I hear a newscaster say, "irregardless," which does happen, I just want to, like, behead them. It's just like, or just at least cut out their tongue so they could never speak again. It's horrible. Everyone has a determined number of footsteps to use up in a lifetime. It's reckless to exercise, since you will only exhaust your quota sooner and die.
See those empty seats? Yeah. They were walking here, and they just expired.
And this is something that my parents also very much agreed with. I think that the motto of the Chast family was, "Why ask for trouble?" And it was, you know, or "Why take chances?" So if you were, like, sitting in the living room, like, why go outside? Because, like, anything and everything terrible could happen. I mean, of course, you could get, like, swallowed by the couch, I guess.
Yeah, or the floor could collapse.
The floor could collapse. Above you, yeah. You know, the terrible things. I mean, look, anything could happen. Yeah. The light could come, you know. But
better,
you know,
there than in nature.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's true, it's true. If you run out of food at a dinner party, the world will end. And the illustration is these aliens that they see Earth has just blown up. And they say, "What happened over there in quadrant 63? Mrs. Proskov ran out of brisket 2 minutes ago." It's obvious. But don't go overboard, or your table will look like a Las Vegas buffet.
And if you'll notice, I think some salmon crept in onto the table.
Yes. Redheads are extroverts.
This is a fact.
Mike says you can only get a Dalmatian if the spots are symmetrical.
And there is a Mike, and people gasp and moan when I say he did return a Dalmatian because the spots weren't symmetrical. When is it sad, because a little whiteout and magic marker would have fixed everything.
Yeah, you could just fix the whole problem. I mean, you know, take the dog to a shoemaker,
right,
for goodness sake. I'm just going to show a couple of cartoons. This is these that appeared in the New Yorker. This is that are mother's themed. This is Mother's Day cards. Bitter, pitying, ironic, guilt-inducing, and pro forma. This is Mom's mortuary. And these are all stories I heard growing up. He never should have divorced his first wife. She was a floozy, and this is what happens to floozies. He pushed himself too hard. See, this goes with
the exercise thing, yeah. One step too many.
Yes. She was never the same after that crackpot diet. And this happened. This actually happened to my uncle. He went on a crackpot diet. He lost all the synovial fluid. Most 8-year-olds don't know about synovial fluid. But he lost all the synovial fluid in his joints. He was pinned to the couch like a butterfly, my mother said. And then he died.
Of course. On the opposite side of that tombstone was probably, "At least he was thin."
And then my favorite, which also I had to show when we were in Miami, which I forgot about. He moved to Florida, and boom, 5 minutes later, he was dead. And this cartoon, a lot of people ask me where I get my ideas for cartoons, and most of the time, you know, I don't really know, but this one actually did come from life. When my daughter was around 16 years old, she was doing her homework in the living room, and as all of you know, having been teenagers at one time or have ever been around teenagers, you know that there's nothing more disgusting in the sight of a teenager's eyes than, like, the adult human body. and an opinion which I completely sympathize with. But if you want to gild that lily, just do a little kind of dance. And I wanted to see if she was paying attention. So I came in to the living room, and I did a little dance, you know, and to the hip-hop. And she just looked up, and she said, "Mom, stop. You're hurting me." So I asked her if I could use it, and she said, okay. And I'm going to close this portion of our evening with a quote from my favorite, one of my favorite quotes about writing from a Polish poet named Czesław Miłosz. I hope I haven't pronounced that totally wrong. And this is an embroidery that I did. It is really bad. It's, you know, just, I got obsessed with hand embroidery. And it's, when a writer is born into a family, the family is finished. And that is it for the slideshow. And now we're going to...
And now we can figure out where to go. There'll be more.
Yes, there's more.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that very entertaining presentation. I thought I'd start with a question about the book. Did you have other titles that you were considering before you landed on this one?
Oh, you had just asked that about a different book. We had so many. I think this is the one we started with, is it?
I think it is. I can't.
We had different illustrations.
You did?
Yeah.
What were some of the other options?
The one that's in the book with the voice balloon coming out of the coffin saying, "Lose the hat."
Yeah.
So that would have worked.
Yeah.
So, questions about mothers. Could you tell us what is your first memory of each of your mothers?
Ooh, well, I remember Roz's mother. God.
Wow.
God, she was just always around. I don't know if I have a first. How about
the
seventh?
The seventh, yeah. Or the sixth, or the earliest.
An early memory. This is really sad. I don't really remember that much of my early years. I just...
God. Can we have the next question?
Yeah, moving on.
Yeah, you kind of stumped us with that one.
No, this one's terrible, too, actually.
Fascinating interview.
No, this is in the same vein, so I'm going to skip it. would you say that logic and honesty strongly characterized your mother's approaches to child-rearing?
Oh, God, no.
My mother was blunt, but I don't know if she was always honest. For example, when her father died, my grandfather... And I said, "What happened to Grandpa?" I was about four. She told me that he moved to Virginia. Swear to God, because he used to live there, he was living in Brooklyn, and then he went down to live with the guy who died with the synovial fluid for a while, and then he died. He died in Virginia. So she said he went to Virginia, and that was kind of it.
I think we're old enough that we grew up before psychology, so nobody had to really kind of think about the consequences or if something that a parent said would lead to therapy in 20 years.
Yeah.
So, because I said so was as logical as a god.
Yeah.
So you're saying it did lead to therapy?
No. It just led to craziness.
Another example of my mother making up interesting stories was when I was a kid, I wanted to watch cartoons on TV basically 24 hours a day, and my mother thought this was like not particularly good for me. So I can still picture this TV. It was this old RCA Victor set, which sometimes appears in my cartoons. And she would disconnect some dial that all that I could get was just like static. And I'd say, "Mommy, I can't get any cartoons on the TV." And she'd say, "Oh, atmospheric conditions."
See, on the other hand, I could watch as much TV as I wanted to, but then what was the fun of that? So I didn't watch any. I have a friend, speaking of great strategies, a friend who gave her daughter a curfew that was an hour later than the curfew of all the kids' friends. So the parent seemed generous, but in fact it was useless.
It's kind of cruel, actually.
Yeah, it's funny.
Do you remember your first fight with your mother?
I think it was
such a long time ago.
Probably shortly after birth.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
It's pretty
like,
soon.
Yeah. I'm guessing it was the next,
This was not the first at all. But in like junior high school, I learned the word bourgeois. And I decided to use it a lot. So I told my parents everything was bourgeois, and I needed to go to boarding school where they didn't teach you anything because school was stymieing my creativity. So I didn't really want to go to, I live in the suburbs where it was bourgeois.
Did the argument work?
No, I stayed in the suburbs.
Would you say, each of you, that your mother was more of a critic or an advisor?
Critic.
I think both. I think both. But some of her advice was just nuts. I mean, you know, she told me that I should never, ever, ever sit directly on the ground. Yeah. And the reason for this was that when she was growing up, her best friend sat directly on the ground. She caught a cold in her kidneys, and she died.
So, did she move to Florida first?
No, unfortunately. I mean, but I think with my parents, almost everything led to death or some horrible kind of, you know, being maimed in some awful
way. Right.
They were right. I mean, everything does, you know, lead that, you know, all roads lead to Rome, basically.
I was told Rome. Nobody needs more than 4 hours of sleep.
You were lied to.
What?
You were lied to.
Well, now you tell me.
Yeah, sorry. You didn't answer my call. Is there any particular words of wisdom that you carry around from your father?
My father, yes. Yeah. Don't you have to?
Well, I'm from Philadelphia, and I was driving on along Chestnut Street with my father, and he said, "There's something I want to tell you before I die." And I thought, oh, God. And he said, "Never park in that parking lot. It's a ripoff." And I never have.
My father's advice was almost as practical as that. He had two pieces of wisdom for me. One was, if you're running to the subway, always make sure you have a token in your hand, which would now be a Metro card. And I still compulsively, if I have the Metro card in my hand when I'm leaving my apartment, I have to have it in my hand. Because you know, if you miss the train when you're like fishing around in your bag for your Metro card, you're going to want to kill yourself. And the other was, don't neglect your teeth. So just those
very
wise
things. I wish I
things.
Had known that.
Yeah.
I got but, neglect your teeth.
Yeah. But I remember when my daughter was going off to college, I gave her a very heartfelt piece of advice, which was, and I sort of sat her down. I made sure she was paying full attention. And I told her, rubber cement is a false friend. And it really is. It really is. I mean, if you have ever, I remember when I met rubber cement, I thought it was like the greatest thing that existed. It was just like I would patch drawings, and it was like, this is really boring to people who don't use art supplies, I bet. Never mind. But anyway, it burns through the paper, and then the patches fall off. So, you know, you use rubber cement. At first you love it, and then you realize it's a false friend.
It's funny. I think, now that I think about it, the advice I was given had to do with stationery supplies. My father had an office supply company, but one was get a filing cabinet very early on so things are organized. And then, as I said, my parents had an office supply company, and my mother did once say, "Have you ever used a pencil twice?"
Have you? We want to know.
Of course, my family was the total opposite, that my parents, being children, they graduated from college into the Depression. They were like 20 years older than most of my friends' parents, and they saved everything. And most of the pencils in our house were like this big. and if not smaller, like with no eraser left, or like just enough eraser that you'd use it, and then like you'd be like ripping a hole in the paper with the metal, you know. But this is a memory that occurred to me the other day that I had repressed, that one of my favorite games, we had so many broken pens in the house that one of my favorite games to play was Pen Hospital.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Patty, did your mother ever call you back with the fourth reason about why you depressed her?
No, by that time she probably had fifth or sixth reason. This is referring to something where my mother called and said, there are four reasons you depress me. One, no boyfriend. Two, no job. Three, no apartment. Four, I can't remember. I'll call you back when I find remember.
It's a setup.
That's hilarious.
Did you receive any particular sartorial advice that sticks with you through the years?
Well, Red and Black I rebelled against. Let's see. Some of it is a little dated. Like, don't wear, if you wear short skirts and high boots, you'll look like Annie Oakley. But then Uggs came along, and that's wrong. I was told not to wear a long baggy top and a short skirt because you'll look like a mushroom. And I don't do that. How about you?
I think my mother's main thing was don't look like a floozy. That was like, because she was an assistant principal, and you saw that picture of her. She was a very serious sort of person. So, you know, you just didn't. And, you know, I guess I don't really look too.
Not too much. Know.
Hello. Yeah. I guess that
so she
wouldn't
was right.
really work if I went to a bar and did it. Probably run in the other direction.
Did your mother or father instill a healthy or unhealthy dose of paranoia in you when you were growing up?
A healthy dose of paranoia?
Oh, healthy?
I said healthy. I qualified. Or unhealthy.
Oh, yeah.
Paranoia. Oh, yeah.
That was what you majored in.
I swam in the world of paranoia. I mean, that was it.
No, see, we weren't paranoid because nothing bad was ever going to happen. So we weren't paranoid.
That's gratifying.
Much.
That's
good
great.
To know.
Yeah.
It seems like dinner parties were a significant part of your parents' lives. Have you inherited that gene?
No, not at all. Because I was taught that dinner parties had to be perfect, so I couldn't live up to it. So, you know, restaurants ahoy.
Yeah. It's also in New York, it's hard to have dinner, unless you have like a giant apartment.
Right.
I mean, it's not just the size of the apartment, it's also, you know, neighbors, and it's just easier to.
Yeah, but even size, it's like, okay, well, one at a time, the guests will come and leave.
Yeah. My parents used to have dinner parties, but it was usually like other teacher friends of theirs. And I was thinking about this the other day. One thing that they did that does not happen at dinner parties anymore, really, is they told jokes. And they were really into, my parents knew a whole bunch of teacher couples that almost all of them were childless because my parents didn't have children until I was born when they were 43. And so most of their friends were people who either couldn't have children or had chosen to be childless. And they all sort of hung out together and they traveled and they shared jokes. But, you know, they would sit around. And I remember because I'd be in my room and I would hear them. And it was a small apartment. I'd hear like, oh, I got a new one. And then, you know, Mrs. Weisberg goes to the doctor, blah, 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 punchline. And then somebody else would have a joke and somebody else. But I was thinking, you know, people don't really, I don't know what it is, whether, you know, because to tell a joke, you'd have to kind of get everybody else at the table to shut up while you told the joke. And, but that seemed to be part of their way of doing things. It was okay to do that. Whereas now, if you did that, like, it better be like the best joke that ever existed, you know. So I don't know. I mean, when was the last time you were at a dinner party when like people started telling jokes, like actual set piece
Saturday.
Jokes? Really? Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
It was a dinner party, and we played Cards Against Humanity. So the whole evening was a series of jokes.
Oh, I never... What's Cards...
I'll tell you later.
Yeah, okay. I like that.
Some of the themes of the book seem to me to be about not sticking out, making a good impression, not embarrassing yourself, in short, about assimilation. And do you have a sense that your parents were comfortable with how they fit in or didn't?
Well, certainly what other people thought of us was important, is important. What was the question again?
I don't know. We should probably just move on. So why is nature so scary?
It's not that
it's scary. It's just so unfun.
It's scary.
There's no TV. And...
It's terrifying.
That's
I mean,
true.
Branches?
Branches.
Earthquakes.
Mm-hmm. Earthquakes.
I guess earthquakes happen inside, too.
But branches?
Yeah. They could come off.
They could.
Weather. They have weather.
Bears.
Weather outside.
Snakes.
There.
Yeah.
Right.
No poisonous plants.
Yet. What about birds?
Spiders.
Birds are part of nature.
Spiders. You like that. You like, that's okay with you.
Spiders?
Yeah.
No, I kill them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Then come
oh,
live with me.
Oh, I don't kill them. I'm kidding. I'm just trying to keep the conversation
Can I call
going.
You? Can I call you next time I
yes.
see a spider?
Yes. If,
yeah.
Metaphorically, he kills yeah. them.
Metaphorically.
Yes.
So a few more questions before we move on to the grand finale. In the end, are mothers always right?
No. I mean, I'm a mom, and I'm certainly not always right. Absolutely. You try, you know, but I don't know.
And at what point did you realize that you had become like your mother?
Ooh.
That's kind of like a when did you... Stop beating your wife question.
Yeah, it is.
I know,
it is.
It's a tough one.
It is.
That's a loaded question.
I think I'm becoming my father. My father was very, very anxious, and he liked Fig Newtons a lot. And I think that, and he never learned how to drive. I mean, I learned to drive, but I hate it. So I think I'm more like him.
I don't like Fig Newton, so I'm definitely not like Roz's father. I just basically inherited the worst from both.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So at this point, we're going to move on to the entertainment portion of our evening. And I'd like to introduce you to the band. Well, is it Euclear Meltdown or Euclear Meltdown?
No one knows.
No one knows.
Yeah.
So No One Knows is here to perform for you this evening.
Let us tell you why we have ukuleles here. Where are they?
They're right
under the chair.
Right under there.
Yep. So the reason we play ukuleles, and I'm using the word play really generously, is that two summers ago, I was invited to a wedding, and the guests were asked to bring a musical instrument if they had one, so that it was, the wedding was coincident in time and place with the solar eclipse. And so after the eclipse ended, we were going to all play Here Comes the Sun. And it was very nice. And I play no musical instrument, still don't. And I mean, I have as much, I'm as musical as like a dishwasher. And but I thought, how hard really can the ukulele be? So I went on Amazon and got this for $49, and it is the cutest thing in the whole world. And it turns out I was right, that if you have like two hands in the internet, you can learn how to play a song. And I showed Roz the ukulele.
And I realized that Patty was right. This really is the cutest thing in the entire world. And it was really not hard to learn how to play. If you can learn like the C chord, the F chord, and the G chord, you can play almost anything. Anyway, we formed this band. Oh, okay, this is a good idea.
And
okay.
I have another okay. detail. Can we use your yeah. chair to put our music on?
Yeah.
All right.
Where should I put this?
Okay.
So we we have this band.
Why not?
Okay.
Where's
great. And it's
We're extremely famous.
Yes.
So famous. Oh, okay. That doesn't seem like lyrics.
Okay.
I think it's this.
Okay. Good.
And we specialize in public domain songs because we don't want to be sued. Although now we're thinking suing would really be a good career move. Sued. So, okay. This is the mother song. On your mark, get set, go.
As I do your laundry, though you're 22, remember that I'll always be the boss of you. Did I mention starting now you're grounded? 'Cause all your pot, I found it. P.S. I love you. You. Must I say it yet again to you, dear? Until the day I die, dear. Put down your damn phone.
Phone.
Elbows off the table. Mouth shut when you chew. Remember that one day soon you'll have kids like you. Never leave the house in that whatever. Eat all your peas forever. P.S. I love you.
You. All right.
Okay.
Our next song is called I Should Be Working on the Railroad, but right now I'm working on some other stuff, and when I finish that, I promise I'll get back to working on the railroad, okay?
Okay.
It's the only title that you need to read because you can't memorize it. Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
I've been working on my memoir all the livelong day. I've been working on my memoir, and I just turned 3 today. Want to hear how I am growing? Rise up so early in the morn. Don't you know a single agent who'll help me toot my horn?
I've been working on my laundry.
I've been working on my laundry. Still have 5 loads left. I've been working on my laundry. Must report a 1 sock theft. Think I know who might have stole it. She gets here early in the morn. She lives in 12K with a ferret, and both of them read porn.
I've been killing time on eBay.
I've been killing time on eBay all the goddamn day. I've been killing time on eBay. Just bought some used bear spray. Can't you hear the FedEx coming? Logged in so early in the morn. Can't you hear the FedEx coming? Who needs 2 tons of corn? eBay, won't you go? eBay, won't you go? eBay, won't you go away, way, way? eBay, won't you go? eBay, won't you go? PayPal cut me off today.
And we have one more. And it's very short because we know the limits of our musical ability.
Yes. Okay.
On your mark, get set, go.
Park, park, park your car kinda near the curb. Ay, 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 you just bumped into Herb.
Thank you for...
Yeah. If you have any questions...
I have a question for Roz. In December, I was the mother of the groom. And I bought my
Mazel tov.
I bought my dress in July. It was black with flowers.
Yay!
I spent 5 months having to say to people, I know it's black, but it's got flowers
on it. Yes.
Now it turned out to be quite successful. But how did yours go?
It went great, and I have worn that dress 3 or 4 times since, and it was black with flowers. You know, it's just, yeah.
And how about the other people? The other
I was there. It was great. I was there. Oh, my God. Yes, this woman is referring to a cartoon that appeared in The New Yorker that my son got married in October, and when I was shopping for mother of the groom dresses, I went with a friend of mine to a local shopping mall, and we were laughing so hard mm-hmm. at some of the choices out there that I thought we were going to get kicked out. Like, one was worse than the next. There were so many, like, sparkly bolero jackets mm-hmm. and weird pastels that, like, no one looks good in, and they were just, you know, when you're like laughing so hard that you're crying almost, you just cannot get your breath. That's what it was like. So I wound up doing a cartoon about the experience.
How did your families deal with if you asked how much something was at the store, you know, that they had bought?
You mean, what do you mean?
Well,
actually?
So,
speaking to the thing.
I had this group that would never tell you how much they spent on anything.
Oh.
And I was just wondering.
You mean if you said, like, how much was your dress?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh. I have this really bad habit of either, not exactly saying how much it was, but like, it was so cheap, or, well, it should be nice, it was so expensive. But yeah. Without giving a number, you know, I remember like when we got gifts at Christmas, my mother would say, you better like it. It costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
It wasn't really, that kind of thing didn't really happen that much in my family because my mother didn't really care much about clothes and she didn't really spend very much on it. And it just was not really a topic that much.
How about how much was that pencil?
Yeah.
We had just come back from a trip to Paris with grandchildren, and your mother called Patty.
Oh, my mother.
Your mom, Janice, called me to find out where to go, what to do. She was taking, I believe, her granddaughter and you.
Right, we went to Paris.
I never heard how the trip turned out.
The trip was great. And in fact, don't tell anybody, I wrote a piece for it in the New York Times about the trip from as if it were my niece. My niece wrote a piece about it. Her travels with her grandmother and aunt in Paris. I can't remember anything other than it was great. I think really well. Thank you. Thank you for the tips.
A friend, hearing about a trip to Paris, a friend told me a mother story today about Paris, where they went as a family, the kids were teenagers, and the mother looked at people walking their dogs and said, you know, the dogs are much smarter here than they are back home. And the kids are like, why do you think that? She said, well, they all speak French.
That's funny you should say that, because 2 days ago we were in Iowa. And
not to brag.
No, do you remember this? Not just Iowa, Iowa City. And we were walking back with the organizer of the event and our moderator, and the moderator was going to Paris with her daughter and was warned, because apparently in Iowa, the dogs like to be pet. It's something to keep in mind when you go to Iowa, all of the dogs. And we were told in Paris, the dogs don't like to be pet. Maybe that's because they're so smart.
Has the paradigm of funny at the New Yorker changed, and if so, how?
I think that humor always changes. You know, what was funny in the 1920s is not going to be funny to somebody in the 1940s, is not going to be funny to somebody in the 1960s, and so on. You know, there's always a shifting kind of current. So, yeah, I think it's probably different from what it was 20 years ago. It's certainly different from what it was like 50 years ago, thank God. But, yeah, it's always changing, I think, a little bit.
I think the humor in the magazine lately has become, like everything else, more political.
Yeah.
But the cartoons seem a little more immune to that.
Yeah, I think, because, you know, when I think about it, Tina Brown was very, she loved topical cartoons. And I think a lot of us found that very trying. One problem that at least I had was that, you know, the thing with topical humor is that it dates like almost immediately. So when I put together my big compilation in 2006, most of the stuff from the teeny years just did not make it in there because it was like just from another, you know, it just really dated. I couldn't even remember some of the people I was making fun of, you know, so I'd much rather... You know, and I did them, so I would much, much, much rather do cartoons that, you know, were about topics that, you know, are more perennial, I guess.
I recall seeing a documentary a few years ago about the presentation of artists submitting their cartoons to the cartoon editor every
yes.
week. People will come in. Do you still need to do something like that, or?
You're talking very semi-serious. That
yes.
documentary. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful documentary. I don't do that. I stopped doing that. Many years ago, shortly after we moved out to Connecticut when my second kid was born. And I for many, many years, I believed it was unlucky to not come in person to submit my work. And so, you know, rain or shine or snow or whatever, I would make myself come in. And then this thing happened, which was that there was some week where I couldn't come in. And it was just something I just could not. And at that time, people submitted by fax, and I faxed in my batch, and I sold a cartoon, and I never went in person after that, because I hate it. It's awful. It's like the most disgusting thing you could imagine. You're sitting there in front of your editor while they're looking at your work, and your needy little face is just sitting there, and I always disliked it, but, you know, now that I realized that my idea of lucky was not true, so... No, I don't go. I send them by email.
Just wondering what kind of obstacles or Me Too moments each of you experienced in your careers.
Obstacles. Oh, I was thinking of how it changed our writing, if we had obstacles. God.
Yeah.
I had none.
We've sometimes talked about, well...
about
that, I think we were kind of lucky in a certain way that when I started,
no one wanted us.
Yeah. I started in 1978 at the New Yorker, and I know that when I submitted my first group of cartoons, I always used the initial R. For some reason, I started doing that when I was in sixth grade, but I think that they were starting to get the idea that maybe. You know, if they have like 40 all male artists, like maybe it would be interesting to have a female cartoonist. And so I think in many ways I benefited.
Yeah, we were talking about sort of the timing of Roz and I entering kind of the professional world. And I was the first girl in the Harvard Lampoon and... Not probably because I was the funniest girl who ever, wanted to join the Harvard Lampoon in 100 years, which was about what it was then, but because 2 years before they decided they had to have women on the Lampoon, and everybody else, it was sort of happening, co-education, and I was kind of like the millionth customer that walked through the door and got the dining room set. I'd like to say I was the funniest, but I probably wasn't. And we both, you know, were not exactly threatening looking or or floozies.
No. I didn't do this. I wanted to. I think about some of the older cartoonists. I think for me also that, like, there was a sort of, like, constellation of problems for me. Like, I wasn't just female. I was also the youngest by 10 years, and my stuff was weird-looking and different sense of humor. And so it was maybe hard for them to pick out, like, just one thing to hate me about.
They cancel each other out.
They kind of can't. Well, yeah, there was just, like, a kind of, like, a lot of different things. They could kind of rotate depending on mood. And I had a lot of wonderful friends, actually, who, you know, they were so tall. It was very interesting. It was like, oh, you're so tall. How can that happen?
You have maps of Manhattan, and I wondered what kind of research you had done to establish the geographical boundaries of places like Leatherovia or Lesbekistan, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Oh, I wish, you know, that is Myra Kalman and Rick Meyerowitz's wonderful, wonderful cover. That's not mine, but thank you for ascribing it to me. It's a fantastic cover.
We could answer for her.
Yeah.
We know her.
I was just kind of curious who the peers are that you guys really enjoy, both cartoonists and authors.
At the New Yorker, I like Ian Frazier very much as a writer.
There's so many. There really are so many great cartoonists. I love, in the current bunch, I love Liana Fink and Ed Steed and William McPhail and Julia Wirtz. She does stuff online, I think, mostly for the New Yorker. There's just so many. And in the people who came in with me, you know, Bob Mankoff and Mick Stevens and Jack Ziegler and Michael Maslin and Victoria Roberts and and then the old guys, you know, like
Charles
Adams.
Sounds like your Oscar thank you, Sage.
Sam Gross, Gayon Wilson, Charles Adams, Helen Hulkinson, Mary Petty. I mean, they're just, you know, they're really, so many of them are great. Mm.
Roz, I know you weren't able to be at the New Yorker Festival this past fall because you had a health problem.
Oh.
Which I know what it was, but anyway. So,
did you hear on the
They announced it.
Oh, they did. Shingles.
I know.
You know, anyway. I don't want anybody to, like, worry that it was something like, you know, when you say, oh, a secret health problem, if anybody could think anything, so I felt compelled to.
At any rate.
Yeah, and then you went to drug rehab.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Exhaustion.
So the panel was very good, but what I'm wondering is, will you be at the New Yorker Festival this coming year?
If they invite me, I will, yeah.
I have a question about the end of week, I forget what they're called, where you send in the captions.
Oh, it was a caption contest.
And there's so few women that at least our finalists are winners. Do you have any theories on that?
Well, I don't like the caption contest. I mean, I barely pay it any attention, so I don't have any theories about that. But I'll tell you why I don't like it, if that's okay. I mean, because maybe it will change your mind. I think that, you know, they would not. I think it's demeaning, actually, to cartoonists. I think that they wouldn't ask a writer, they wouldn't ask, like, Alice Munro, you know, why don't you write 7/8 of a story? And we'll have our readers, you know, make up an ending, you know? I think that it also makes it kind of like... I don't know. It just flattens everything out. It makes it like it doesn't really matter who draws it, what the style is. It's just kind of like, why don't you just do it with, like, you know, photographs or just some fucking stick figures or something? And for me, the drawing is so intrinsic. It's so important. You know, when I think about the cartoons that I love, you know, George Booth, Ed Korn, these people, where the style of drawing was so much a part of the joke. And the caption contest, the drawing just doesn't matter at all. It really could be just like hire some like nudnik, you know, to just like block out, and then you just kind of caption these very standard, but people like it, so you know, what do I know? You know, and
I'm getting the impression you don't like it.
Yeah, I'm spitting tax here, but yeah.
Well, we're done with tax. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Patty Marks and Raj Das.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.